Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. This morning, we'll be kicking off our month-long Mother's Day celebration, and I would like to start by sharing with all of you a recipe for living my German mom, Diane Heise, taught me a long time ago. She said, "Every once in a while, a situation may occur that requires us to radiate our energy of positive goodwill, compassion, and love for others. Until we try to put ourselves beyond our comfort zone, we will not realize we have what it takes to make a difference in that person's life and in ours." Joining me this morning are a couple of individuals who have done just that, making a positive difference in our global community. Lana Nguyen is a mother who had adopted her daughter from Vietnam during the Operation Baby Lift. And Tammy Nguyen Lee, a filmmaker who recently made an award-winning movie about Operation Baby Lift. We will be discussing the 35th anniversary of Operation Baby Lift, the impact it had on the children who were saved, and the joy it brought to adopted parents in the United States. Good morning, Lana and Tammy, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you ladies doing this morning?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having us.
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you.
I'm so glad to have you both here today. Let us start by having each of you tell us a little bit about yourself. Lana, why don't you walk us through your life's journey from childhood to the present moment, please?
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I was born in New York City, in an area of New York City called the South Bronx, and it's basically a tenement area and a low-income area. So it was difficult childhood, but it was very diverse, and I felt that that stood me in good stead for the rest of my life. I became a flutist. I thought that I enjoyed music very much. I went to the High School of Performing Arts, known as the Fame School, movie of the same name. And there I learned to play classical flute and become a classical musician. Mm-hmm. Went to Manus College of Music, Conservatory of Music, and I became a classical musician, played with many orchestras and taught at the college level and enjoyed that very much. Met my husband, Byron, during my last year of college, and we married in January of 1968, a long time ago, and we wanted to be parents. Very much. 6 years into our marriage, several miscarriages, and in those days there wasn't very much that doctors could help you with along those mm-hmm. lines. So we decided to adopt. Mm-hmm. It was the winter of 1974. We went to a large New York City adoption agency, and we said, "What is the wait for to adopt a baby mm-hmm. in America, in the United States?" And we were told there was a 2-year wait. And all I can remember thinking is, oh no, another 2 years of being childless.
Right.
So we said, "Any other options?" And the social worker said, very historic words for us, "Have you considered adopting a baby from Vietnam?" Mm-hmm. Until she said those words, the thought hadn't crossed our minds. The minute she said it, it was like the light bulb went off. And we turned to each other and thought, and we said, "Sure, how do we start?" Several months later, we were approved, and a lot of paperwork, and we were awaiting the arrival of our baby daughter, whom we had named Heather Constance Nguyen, from Vietnam. This is March of 75, and at that point, things changed quite rapidly in Vietnam, and all the adoptive parents who were waiting were told that their children would never arrive. It was just too dangerous a situation. Then we had the maverick flight of Ed Daly and World Airways, brought 57 Vietnamese orphans to the United States, and that kicked things up again. President Gerald Ford, who is an adoptee himself, signed Baby Lift into law on April 3rd, and we were again waiting the arrival of our daughter. Tragically, the first military plane on April 4th, 1975, crashed 12 minutes outside of Tanzanut Airport with loss of life, quite significant loss of life, but several people were saved. We were still awaiting our daughter. She, Heather, left Vietnam on April 5th, hospitalized several times en route, and came home to us on April 23rd, 1975, but she was quite ill. She was ill with something called pneumocystis carini pneumonia, which had not been seen in the United States until that time. Hospitalized again on April 29th, which is the same day as the end of the Vietnam War, Heather died on May 17th, 1975, at 4:30 in the afternoon. 3 days later, the night of her funeral, we were told there were some babies that were still in hospital, and our daughter Jennifer Nguyen Nguyen became the last baby ever placed from Baby Lift on June 5th. And then when subsequently we adopted a son from Korea in 1979, and now I'm a grandma to bring you up to date.
Fantastic. That sounds wonderful. I mean, it looks like you have a tremendous amount of experience with, you know, being an adopted mom and so forth, which I'm going to, you know, we're going to talk about it later and so forth, but it's just fascinating to hear the story about the fact that you had miscarriages and everything else that I've encountered with my mom in Malaysia. So that's quite interesting. Tammy, how about you? Please walk us through your life's journey from childhood to the present moment.
Well, I had a little bit of a different upbringing. I was born in Saigon in Vietnam after the war. Mm-hmm. We ended up coming to the U.S. as boat people, as you know, hundreds of thousands of refugees who had left the country in seeking freedom. And so we were sponsored over to the U.S. by a church in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for a number of years with American grandparents and my family. And, you know, growing up, you know, very much similar to the experience of many of the adoptees. And so even though I'm not a Vietnamese adoptee, there were so many pieces of their journey that I think were reflected in my own life that I found very personal and relatable. And it wasn't until about 1984, 1985 that we moved to Texas to rejoin other members of our family. And I grew up in a small suburb of Dallas called Garland, Texas, attended gifted and talented magnet schools, all the way until I was in high school, where I had developed, I guess, a talent and a passion for acting and theater. And it was right around senior year of high school that I decided I wanted to really make this my life's work, and decided I wanted to pursue this more seriously as a career. So I actually applied to several schools that had film programs, and one of them was NYU, and I got in on a scholarship. But being the oldest child and the oldest daughter, my mother wasn't quite comfortable letting me go so far away. But I did decide to stay and attended a really wonderful college called SMU, Southern Methodist University, and you know, that's where that was my playground and where I honed my craft and where I was mentored. Before I decided to then, you know, once I graduated, I left Texas, my roots, I guess, that's my hometown, and went to UCLA and got my master's in the producers program. And that's where I really got a huge understanding of the industry. And I think it was in that transition from Dallas to LA that I heard about this historic event called Operation Baby Lift while I was volunteering for the Vietnamese Community Center. And it was the 25th anniversary, and we were doing a play called Thank You, America, for the American military. And it was our way of paying tribute to all of the historic, I guess, missions and actions for the Vietnamese people. And I met an American nurse named Mary Nguyen. She was a Caucasian woman with a Vietnamese last name who ended up marrying a Vietnamese man after she had served over in Vietnam and told me about this amazing event that I had never heard of. And it was a little bit embarrassing at the time because, you know, I was a Vietnamese person who had never heard about this event in my own heritage. And that story of Operation Baby Lift just stayed with me. There was something very poignant and very heartfelt about it, and at the time I thought it was such, you know, a fairy tale about two sides coming together for a common purpose. And it wasn't until much later where I, you know, was able to really dig in that I found there was much more conflict and complication and controversy to the story itself, and it didn't all tie up in a nice bow. But, you know, that's where my passion as a Vietnamese person, as a filmmaker, comes into all this. Was I just felt this was a story from my own perspective and from my interaction with the adoptees had to be told. And as I spoke more to them, it became even more clear that it was from their voice that the story really needed to be told.
Fantastic. I mean, that sounds wonderful. Looks like you have a very full young life so far. That's wonderful. Lana,
Thank
what
you.
Is Operation Baby Lift? I mean, you know, I know you touched briefly about it, but you certainly were in the thick of things back in 74, 75. So please kind of walk us through what the whole thing is all about.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Great question. By March of 75, the Viet Cong had a significant troop movement going towards the south. And the rumor was that although there were tens of thousands of orphans and probably several thousand ready to come to the U.S., that none of them would be able to get to the United States because it was just too dangerous. And then Ed Daly appeared on the scene, president of World Airways, and managed at the end of March 1975 to bring 57 Vietnamese war orphans to the United States, and they landed in Oakland, California. And that particular day, when they landed in early April 75, it was as though no matter what your politics were, no matter what your thoughts were of the Vietnam War, you sort of, everyone in the United States sort of stood up a little straighter, or we sat up a little straighter. We did something. And the idea was that there was chaos in Vietnam. But there they were, 57 Vietnamese war orphans going to families all across the United States. And I think it galvanized everyone here, the thought that, well, maybe we could do something. We could do some good. And I think that got communicated to the President of the United States, Gerald R. Ford, again, himself an adoptee. And he went ahead without any focus groups or polls or anything like that and signed Baby Lift into law and said that $2 million of taxpayer money would go towards it. U.S. military would commence the operation. I believe he named it Operation Baby Lift, and it commenced on April 4th, 1975.
And what I understand also, this Operation Baby Lift, I mean, what I've read about it, I mean, it's something that, children from orphanage and certain, basically these children were not really necessarily wanted by the locals, so to speak, you know, for whatever reasons, which is, you know, it's not really that important. But the point is that they were sort of like, in no man's land, so to speak.
In harm's way. I've always thought of it exactly the same way that, that you've just stated. And these were children in harm's way. I don't know any government at which these children would have been at the top of the list. Certainly, I've grieved for 35 years for the birth parents, and my website, which we'll probably talk about later, tries its best to help reunite any of the birth parents who communicate with us. So there were good people on all sides, people trying. And for 35 years I've thought about it, and I strongly, sincerely believe the only thing that could have been done at that moment was to evacuate those 2,548 children. And everyone involved was an unsung hero, in my opinion.
That's fantastic. And how is your initial involvement with it? I mean, I know you touched briefly with regards to in terms of adopting from someone a baby from this program, and of course you started out with the first one, and that didn't quite work out the way it should. And of course, you were the what I understand, you adopted the last child that was part of this program, correct?
Yes, she was the last baby placed because she was in the hospital for quite some time. They weren't sure that my daughter Jennifer would survive either, so she remained in hospital in Colorado through June 5th. We just sort of became part of history, a typical suburban couple, and not realizing that we would become part of what I consider one of the great humanitarian efforts of the 20th century, that this was done just overwhelms me at times. And we just sort of fell into it. We certainly didn't know it was going to happen. And in the midst of it all, I don't think we understood the historic import of it. But I have a friend who says that Baby Lift changed the complexion of the United States. Prior to Baby Lift, there were very few international adoptions. And Baby Lift happened suddenly, over 2,500, nearly 3,000 orphans across the United States, changing so many communities and so many lives. And our family became transcultured and transracial overnight. And I think that was very good for the United States. And I think it's, it was a positive thing.
Wonderful. Tammy, what inspired you to make the movie? I know that you talk about it was quite, you were caught basically blindsided, not knowing about Operation Baby Lift. And I think, being from Asia myself, I know that sometimes our parents or and certainly in their generations, they tend not to, for better or worse, there are certain things in life they tend to forget or want to forget. And so it kind of puts us in a situation where we're kind of naive about a lot of things. And then getting blindsided like that, suddenly it changed your opinion about certain things. So what kind of really, you know, the core of it, you know, getting you to get going with Operation Baby Lift?
That is actually, you touched on some really great points there, and it's so true. Growing up in my family, you know, as a first generation or first and a half, I'm not sure how to call myself, but, you know, we never really talked about Vietnam in a very open way because it was so shadowed with, you know, a lot of pain, you know, personal pain. So I never felt comfortable asking my parents too much about it.
Right.
And then in the school systems here in the U.S., you get a very limited version of what happened and a very biased version. Mm-hmm. So in my own history, I didn't understand what the war was about. And to find out that there was actually, to me, a shining moment of what came out of that horrific time was kind of compelling. And so that was what I was really interested to find out more about. And again, on the outset, I did feel like Operation Baby Lift was this wonderful moment. But it was mired in a lot of controversy that I felt as a filmmaker, I had to do due diligence and explore both sides of what did this event mean to so many people. But ironically, it wasn't until a couple months after I was researching this and had already started to make it a very personal passion project of mine that my mother told me that I had a very personal connection to the film, and it was that my great aunt had died on that first crash, and I had no idea. And if I hadn't already been motivated to tell the story, I became even more motivated after that. And it wasn't until just recently that I became more public about that knowledge. I think, you know, going through the last 4.5 years of production, very few people knew my personal connection to the project because I didn't want to make it about that. It was about, you know, so much more than that. But it definitely inspired me to continue to do the project.
How does it, you know, how is it received by the Vietnamese community that you grew up with? Because one of the things that I do encounter, and again, I'm speaking broadly here, not everyone, but certainly it's a cultural thing. You know, we tend to forget about certain things painful, or in some cases, we're ashamed. You see, because it's one of those things where it's an obscure way of looking at things sometimes, and you know, it's not like perhaps it's not our shining moments. I guess we want to be at our best at all times. So certainly, we certainly want to low key the not so shiny moments, and we always want to highlight our shiny moments. How has that impacted you in sense of, you know, you grew up here, obviously, you know, you may have kept up with certain heritage, certain traditions with the community, the Vietnamese community itself, and then also on the flip side, you realize, like, whoa, wait a minute now. This is something, you know, that changed tremendously, and it touched you personally in some ways. How was your reaction towards that, and how was their reaction towards your reaction of wanting to go forward with it?
Right. Well, you know, we in film festivals, you get to target a certain type of audience, and as much as you want to target a very broad audience, the people who have come out to see the films tend to be on the younger side.
Right.
So whether it be Vietnamese or non-Vietnamese, people who are supportive of the film because they're connected through Baby Lift or through adoption in general, the overwhelming response has been very, very positive. From people who are like me, who are not connected, who are young Vietnamese, I think they are also inspired and, you know, awed and shamed that this was something they didn't know about, and they're very grateful to know that it's part of their heritage.
Right.
For the older generation, I think they do have an acknowledgement that this happened, but I'm not quite sure what their response is to, you know, why it happened. I think for the most part, the reactions we get are people, you know, who are very tied to this. So I feel like for the most part, everything has been positive.
Right.
But I would be curious to see how this would be received in an older Vietnamese community.
Right. Me too. I think it's fascinating to know because you do have a generational gap, so to speak, and the comprehension of what's right and truthful and to be proud of versus something that to be shameful of. And I'm no genius in terms of answering that question, and I think this is a living thing that, you know, time will tell in hindsight.
How I think in general, what the film does is it doesn't cast, I mean, it allows the audience to think about how they feel this was. Mm-hmm. And I tried not to put any of myself or my own personal opinions to direct people's judgment. And really it's about, it's an interesting film because it's a case study of what did happen to these adoptees 35 years
right.
later. So it's almost indisputable because you're hearing their stories from their own words. No one's telling them what to say. No one's shaping their story. They are telling it truthfully
right.
from their own perspective and their own journey. So I think for anyone watching it, I think that's probably the most interesting part is if you're curious in adoption or international adoption, this is almost like the looking glass or the you know, the mirror ball that you would look through to see what your child, what complications and what kind of journey your child might go on 35 years down the line.
Right, right. And it, the humanitarian aspects of this whole thing is humongous because when it's all said and done, whether these babies were orphaned or not, they are actually human beings. And we're on the other side of the, you know, the globe, we may have turmoil, and then on the other side of the globe, you do have people that thought of, you know, hey, wait a minute now, you know, life's worth saving, and so the story goes. And so that makes a positive difference to me in my mind, not necessarily from the political side or non-political side, but more from a standpoint of, you know, we all, when it's all said and done, we're all connected, we're human beings, and I'm glad that this happened too. And I have to be one of the people that to raise my hand and say, you know, I've never heard of Operation Baby Lift until I had the opportunity to obviously to read Lana's answer to my query for this show. So that's fantastic, and I'm glad that I'm exposed to this because I think this is a wonderful story to talk about on Mother's Day. Tammy, how about getting funding for this, you know, this project? Obviously, I know you worked on this for a long time, so how's that? How did that go about?
There's no long and complicated answer to this one. We, you know, just
did you win the lottery that we all did not know about or something?
You know, if I had, the project would have taken, you know, not 5 years, that's for sure. But I got a very small grant to start out from UCLA when I graduated. It was a fellowship for my work in Asian-themed projects. And so, you know, films like this, I mean, we traveled across the country and interviewed and to Vietnam and interviewed 20 interviewees. So we didn't have a budget starting out. Everything was kind of begged, borrowed, stolen, and we just price-lined and hot-wired our way through this whole thing. We funded it on our own for the most part, too, and slowly later down the line when people found out about the project, they started giving us little donations here and there that would help. But for the most part, we did this on our own because my husband and I just felt, you know, that this was our passion, and it was I think, a blessing to be given the opportunity to tell the story. Mm-hmm. And every time, you know, I had a little bit of money that I could tuck away, we devoted it towards the film. And anytime we had vacation time, instead of taking a vacation, we would go and interview someone. So I was lucky in that I got to take my husband with me, and it was a really great experience to be able to do that together. So it was like our marriage, actually, you know, we celebrated our anniversary on the day that we premiered it in Dallas last year. It was our fifth anniversary.
Congratulations.
It was an amazing feeling because it was like showing everyone our baby that we had been working on for 5 years. And it was just the coolest experience. But, yeah, we really did do this so much on our own and with some help from supporters in the community. It was out of the spirit of the film that we started a nonprofit called ATG Against the Grain Productions. And that has also started to help with the distribution and outreach efforts that we do. But predominantly that nonprofit is an umbrella to create more artistic opportunities for Asian Americans because, you know, for me growing up, I definitely didn't have that sense of support. And I wanted to be able to allow others to be able to tell their story, whether it be through film or art or photography or fashion or whatever that could be. And then we also, a lot of our funds go towards orphanages in Vietnam for now until we can, you know, set up more support to do it in other parts of Asia.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And how is your mom taking all of this? I mean, in terms of you all of a sudden, you know, championing certain things that may or may not be something that I guess the older generation look at, you know, in a I guess, a kind light, or so to speak. So how is she taking all of this?
I think actually she's pretty proud of what I'm doing and the I think the response that the film has gotten, again, because I didn't insert myself into it, and the story is what it is. So I feel like I was just a conduit. But I think she's pretty proud. I think, you know, from a Vietnamese mother's perspective, you know, being someone who supports a child in the arts is never easy because you want your child to grow up with an occupation that's going to help them sustain and support themselves, you know, consistently. And so
right,
I think she was
right.
really worried.
Hey, I've been there, done that.
Right.
What are you doing? Are you crazy?
Exactly.
Are you out of your mind?
And, you know, I completely understand because when you come from a country that's been torn through war, you want safety and stability for your child.
Right.
And to be given that luxury of the choice to go into something like this is unheard of.
Right.
And for me, it was never a choice of luxury. It was always a choice of a purpose, that this was my best way to give back. So whether I made nothing or something, this was the lifestyle that I had chosen. I think she has come to terms with that, and she now supports me in the best way that she can. But I think she's started to understand, and I think that's the best thing you can ask for of a parent who has come from that culture, is,
right.
you know, to slowly open their eyes to what are the opportunities that can come from something like
certainly.
This.
Certainly, right. And when and again, it's this is again, Lana, which is interesting is that having the opportunity to come to the United States for myself, and I'm sure I can speak for Tammy in the sense that, you know, it is a land of opportunity. It gives us an opportunity to do whatever we want and devote our time and make something beautiful out of it, and we can follow our heart, so to speak, to do it.
Yeah.
Lana, how about you? I know you were very passionate about this whole Operation Baby Lift, and you started a website and basically a following for the last 30-something years or so in Vietnam Baby Lift. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, the website is www.vietnambabylift, all one word, .org, and it only exists because of a Vietnam veteran whose name is Charlie Wilbur, who maintains it for me. And then I also wrote the book, Global Mom, Notes from a Pioneer Adoptive Family, because we were always being told by people in the community that we had been pioneers. And you can always reach me via email through the website and through Lana Noon, all one word, at yahoo.com about the book and the website. And that's been a gift. We've just helped some people reunite with their birth children. We have provided an opportunity for veterans and civilians who were involved in Baby Lift to have a voice on the website as well, and we try to promote the different adoptee groups and different projects that are out there. And the only thing the website won't do is to become political.
I refuse
to do that. But humanitarian efforts are applauded, and anyone listening who is interested in, if they do have a Baby Lift story, please feel free to contact me. That's part of the mission of the website.
And what basically inspired you to do all this? I mean, I knew there were, I mean, we're talking about 2,500 or so children that were adopted, I guess, in the course of, you know, this Baby Lift project. And, you know, I've been to your website, and I've seen tremendous work that you've done, and you've been recognized for it and so forth. And I have to say that, you know, you've done a tremendous job with it, and it's all about motherly love, and I truly appreciate it from someone who has adopted myself. I can't ask for anything more in terms of you championing the motherly love that's out there and wanting to really make a positive difference. What gets you to this level of, you know, of wanting to be so involved with this whole process?
Great question, and quite frankly, what happened was Heather, when Heather was in the hospital, we were there every day, and 2 days before her death, I finally realized that it was a hopeless situation. I could never understand why she had come all this distance. I thought, well, she must survive. That must be the story. And but 2 days before her death, I knew it was all over. She was just too ill. And so I sat in her hospital room, and I made a promise to her that I would never let Baby Lift be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that her short life would not be in vain. I had no clue what I was supposed to do, but I just felt that that was part of my journey. And I've since read that parents whose children die, especially at a young age, have to find something to sort of hold on to in their lives, a mission,
something related to their child and what they've gone through. And so that became my mission. And it's my way of remembering Heather and trying to honor those who were involved in Baby Lift. And it's kept me going for 35 years, and I dare say it will keep me going for as long as I'm here. With the promise I made.
Tell us some of the heroes that were involved in making this Baby Lift possible. I knew there are a lot. I mean, I know it's a presidential initiative by President Ford, but I knew there are a lot of unsung heroes at the ground level that basically made this whole thing possible.
Yes, I think forefront in my mind is Sally Vineyard. She's well, she might mind this, but she's 85, I believe, years young right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there till the very last day and was very instrumental in processing the children. She had two tours of duty in Vietnam as a civilian. And, of course, much of the military, General Homer G. Smith and those who worked with him in the defense attaché office who were there at the very end as well. And so many of the civilians and military, we have retired Colonel Dennis Traynor, who is known as Bud Traynor, who was the pilot of the C-5A and managed to nearly get back to Tansanute and save the lives of a little less than half of the people on board, which was an extraordinary feat. And, of course, the birth families, those who treasured their children and had to see them go. And people in the adoption agencies, the seven agencies that were involved in Baby Lift, Friends of Children of Vietnam, Sherry Clark and Ross Meter, Holt International, Friends for All Children, Sister Susan McDonald and Sister Mary Neal Gage, and so many people, Sister Therese LeBlanc, who carried my daughter on the last plane, the last Baby Lift flight, carried her in her arms. So people like that are just my personal unsung heroes of all of this.
I mean, these individuals, obviously made a decision for sacrifices on their own that, putting their life online to do this. And, of course, we had the tragic accident of the very first plane that took off. And it's amazing at what, this Harper and the magnitude of this whole thing that transpired. And I presume that you guys are still keeping in touch with through your organization with the various individuals that are involved with this, adopted children as well as their parents too?
That's been a real blessing. When the children first came over, we had an adoptive parents group of parents who had adopted children from Vietnam, and we had picnics and tests. Parties and holiday parties, and one of them, one of the moms stood up and said, "What are we going to do about the Amerasian children over the age of 10 who were not allowed to come to the United States via Baby Lift?" And we started a grassroots campaign to bring the Amerasian children to the United States, and we had petitions that were signed, and we went to our local congressman. He co-sponsored the unaccompanied minors bill that was passed during the 1980s and brought those children to the U.S. So that was a grassroots campaign, and then of course, the Internet has been invaluable. Every day I get several emails from people who said say things like, I was there at the Presidio base, and I remember caring for the children. Colonel Bob Kane, who was commanding officer, was very helpful in Baby Lift, extraordinary, instrumental in it. And, I get emails, countless emails every week and every day, and I try to write back to everyone and say, we're so happy you did this, and thank you, and try to help them connect with anyone they're looking for at the time.
And these were, in all actuality, a lot of these events continued long after 75.
Yes. For several years, there was very little communication, but then when the relationship between the United States and the new government in Vietnam reopened in the late 1980s and into the 1990s, that was helpful. And then in 2005, there was a reunion trip, the first Baby Lift reunion trip that was actually honored by the new regime in Vietnam, and we were welcomed there. And that was under the tutelage of World Airways that, of course, had brought the first 21 children back to Vietnam in 2005. And so the Internet, I think, has been the door that's opened all of this to us.
That's amazing. That's really fantastic. Well, let's fast forward 35 years forward. Tammy, when doing your movie, what sort of what some of the great individual stories you encountered in the 5 years that you were putting all this together?
Oh my gosh, there's so many to name. It's kind of hard to. It's almost like picking your children, but I think every single one of them brings with them a very different, unique spin and perspective from the people who were there on the ground. I mean, I think it really humbled me to think that they were there during a war at the age that I was, same age, helping bring all of these children out, and to think about the bravery and the fearlessness and the thought and the care and the love that they had, it was just awe-inspiring. I think that struck me so many times when we spoke to Ross Meter, who was, you know, at the time 19 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know that they even thought that there was any other choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an adult, I do wonder, you know, could I have done that in their same shoes? It is really amazing to think about what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you flip the coin and hear about the adoptees and all the things that they have gone through, I don't know that they, you know, there wasn't a choice to the life that they were given.
Right.
And so I think it's brave for them to let an unknown person like me come into their lives and share these intimate stories. And for those who haven't seen the film, there's some very raw and honest emotion that comes forward from some of the most unexpected of adoptees. Mm-hmm. I think that, to me, is something that I'm very honored to be able to share and to have had that trust with them, because I think it's something that needed to be told from their perspective for them to heal, but then also for others to be able to hear and relate and feel a sense of belonging and community, that there were other people out there that had also experienced the same things and that they were not alone. So I'm actually awed by all the stories, whether they experienced tragedy or triumph or, you know, however they explain their story. It's just the way everyone weaves together. I think that's what is the most amazing about this whole historic event, is bringing people from all walks of life to be able to come together and discuss the good and the bad of this very, very significant part of our history.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like what you did was you created a portal for these individuals that were involved on both sides of the equation, so to speak, an outlet to express himself. And because
that's
of...
That's totally right, yeah.
Yeah, because of the fact that, you know, a lot of times we have movies, we have scripts, and whether it's a documentary or not, we do have a certain guidelines and everything else, but it seems to me that the way your approach is basically is very, very fluid. And I'm sure you were caught in certain surprises yourself, you know, from that perspective, so which is quite interesting. What are some of the individual challenges that you've heard that basically touch your heart from that perspective?
You know, in the film, we segue from the history, which is a good third of the film, to the two-thirds of the film that focus on the adoptees and their experience with, you know, from racism to parenthood to birth parents. And then we segue into a micro story about one adoptee couple who are trying to adopt a son from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was, to me, I felt was so compelling and made the story contemporary and relevant to people
right.
who were trying to adopt today.
Mm-hmm.
And from, you know, from my own perspective, with myself and my husband, you know, we had been trying to have a child for a big part of this film, and so it was very personal for me to see what they had gone through, very emotionally trying, and to see, you know, just what you do have to go through and how you have to prepare yourself emotionally, financially, to do something so that has no rules, no time, no standards, no expectations. You just have to go into it not knowing. And to watch a couple that I felt, you know, they were very close to me. They still are. To see them go through that was hard. It was really, really hard to see them go through that. But in the end, we got great news just recently that they got a referral and they're going to be going to Vietnam this month to go pick up their son. So that has been the happy ending that we had hoped for this film that has finally happened, and it's just amazing to be a part of that.
That sounds fantastic. And these pretty much the second generation that that kind of went back to its roots, to their roots, I guess, and wanting to adopt and often from Vietnam, correct?
Right. But unfortunately, I think, and we talk about this in the film, there's so many spoilers I'm giving away now, but Vietnam did end adoption with the U.S. 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost 2 years ago, I believe, this month. So as of this point, no U.S. citizens can adopt from Vietnam. And the couple that we followed actually ended up moving to Canada, and they were able to coordinate it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, that's not a solution or an option for people here.
Sure, sure. Well, and again, this is all about politics, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, but hopefully things will change. How has it impacted you personally, making this movie? I'm sure, like I said again, I mean, you didn't expect it to be, first and foremost, finding out about it is a life-changing experience, and then as you dealt with it, and of course, the fact that you were in it for 5 years and having the opportunity to go, you know, of course, here and back to Vietnam several times, and then meeting all these people, and I guess, I'm sure you started out with a white canvas, and basically let someone else do the painting. So how
right.
has that impacted you personally?
You know, my husband and I joke about this because I kind of convinced him to do this with me because he's not in the industry at all. And I told him, you know, I wanted to do this documentary. And he asked me, you know, how long is it going to take? And I said, oh, you know, about a year. 4 years later, as you know, we've been trekking across the country, you know, we talk about the challenges that we face, from the financial parts to just trying to find adoptees, because it was, you know, starting a time when Facebook wasn't as big and people weren't as connected, so it was really, really hard. But we think about all the challenges that we went through and the people that we've become today because we went through those experiences as producers, but then as, you know, on a personal level, the people that we've met and the stories that we've gotten to hear have changed us and, for me, have healed me in so many different ways, because I feel like I have a new community, and I hope that the adoptees feel that way too.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from my personal perspective, this was probably one of the biggest gifts, you know, it was a blessing for me, and the biggest gift that I could give anyone else was, you know, this story. And so I hope that, you know, when I have children someday and they see that, you know, that their parents created this together, I hope that they're really proud of what we did, because it was all done out of love. You know, we weren't paid to do it. No one told us to do it. No one asked us to do it. We did it completely out of our own passion and love for the people who were within the story. So I think, I mean, I couldn't tell you how much I've changed. I'm sure maybe other people can, but I just know that I'm a better person for having done this.
Personally, for yourself, do you feel there's a certain change within yourself, the way you look at things?
I don't know that it changed my perception of adoption anymore. I've always been very open-minded about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's changed my conviction more, that I think I always had it within me to want to adopt, and now I want to even more. And I think I have a better understanding, because this film, if anything, is about education and enlightenment for those who didn't know what the issues were.
Mm-hmm.
And so I obviously feel more educated about what happened and the issues, and to be able to talk to people about this, that's the biggest change. But the emotional, the spiritual change, the feeling of connection that I have to the adoptees and to this community feels that much stronger.
I see. Lana, how about being an adopted mom impacted your life?
Well, thank you. It's been 35 years of this amazing adventure. And, of course, there were a lot of fun moments on the way. Our daughter, Jenny, from Vietnam, our son, Jason, from Korea. So when they were growing up, whenever they had a bit of sibling rivalry, Jason would say, "My birth country is better than yours." Only when raising children from two different countries will you hear that. And Jenny would say, "Well, my room's bigger. I came first." So that was the fun part. And then there were other things that we didn't always, you know, we weren't always cognizant of the racism that was there and that they went through. And that saddened me greatly, that perhaps we didn't, you know, my husband Byron and I just didn't sense that that was going on in their lives till they were old enough to tell us about it, and then we got very involved in so many things within the adoptive community, and that's just been a tremendous joy and blessing. So it's just been 35 years of a wonderful adventure being a mom.
Well, what were some of the challenges as an adopted mom, as well as for your adopted children that you guys encountered over the years, especially, you know, this is reality, so to speak, because you guys have charted waters that have not been charted before, adopting foreign kids, and, of course, issues of, you know, Amerasians and those kind of things, unpopular war, you know, name it, you know, whatever it is, it's all there. How has that been for you guys?
Well, that's a wonderful question, and we were in the forefront of that. We used to notice that there were genealogy projects going on at the schools, and we'd have to go in and talk to the teacher about that, and hopefully that broadened their perspective. And one day, Jennifer loved going to school on the school bus, but one day came home and said, "I'm not going on the bus anymore," and it was hard to find out why, and so finally, one of her little friends told her mom, "Well, I know why Jen doesn't want to go on that bus anymore. The bus driver keeps talking to her in that funny language, and Jenny doesn't like it." So I spoke to the bus driver, and it turned out he was a very nice gentleman. He was a Vietnam veteran. Jenny was kind of quiet, and he thought she didn't understand English, so he started talking to her in Vietnamese. And, of course, Jennifer didn't understand Vietnamese, and so I chatted with the bus driver, and he understood, and Jen went back on the bus, and things like that. Of course, the questions, you know, who are your real parents? That's always the big one for adoptive parents, because we don't always know.
Right.
And Jason, one time at Thanksgiving, we were talking about mom's mom was coming for dinner and dad's mom, and Jason looked at me. Jason was older when he came. He was over 3 years old, so he remembered his birth mom. And Jason just looked at me very innocently and said, "Is my mom coming?" And, you know, when you're mashing the turnips, that's kind of a difficult question to address. So there were things like that. We tried to just answer them honestly and tried to give our children a sense of bearing in life, safe community with our family, extended family and friends. And I always say give them a lot of hugs and try to smile and get through it together.
How I know you and your daughter obviously were in Tammy's movie. How is her reaction to this whole thing?
It's been fascinating, Tammy. I've enjoyed listening to your portion of the interview here, and we were just so honored to be part of the movie. I know Jen feels that way, and I certainly did. And I'd seen the movie for the first time last Saturday at our 35th anniversary program at the New Jersey Vietnam Era Educational Center in Holmdel. They hosted a wonderful celebration, and the movie is just beautiful and outstanding, very evocative of everything that Tammy has talked about, and very artistically done. So we enjoyed it very much, and just proud to be honored to be part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting. And Tammy, I mean, the movie obviously had won several great awards. Please tell us about it.
I am so grateful. I don't even know how to articulate. I mean, our first festival at our world premiere was at the Vietnamese International Film Festival in Southern California. And we won the Audience Choice Award for Best Feature Film. And I was just amazed at the support that we got there and beyond from the festival and from the community. It's, you know, it's, I think films like this that are independent and small and somewhat can be considered a niche film, to find a place with an audience's heart, I mean, it would have been great if it's also from the festival, but the fact that it's an Audience Choice Award, letting the people speak and say that this was their favorite for the festival was just so validating. All that time that we put into it and all the people who were in it, I think it was really validating. And then we went on and got the Audience Choice Award for Best Documentary at the Philadelphia Asian Film Festival, too. And I think, you know, not that it was ever about the awards, but to know that it sparked something in people's hearts to be able to to act and vote and say that this is what affected them really is just an amazing feeling. And we've continued to go on and screen at many other festivals around the country. I think 12 in total now. And we're slowing that down a bit so that we can now focus on our DVD release, which is coming out tomorrow, May 5th. And so, you know, our plan with this was to try to reach as many people as we could, whether it be festivals, whether it be to DVD, whether it be, you know, through public broadcasts. We're actually under consideration right now by Roco Films, which is
mm-hmm.
Oprah's documentary company for her new network OWN. And so, you know, our goal is no matter what happens, we just want people to see this and to be affected by it. And, you know, the awards are great. They're, you know, they're icing on the cake, but, you know, the real reward, I think the emails that we get and the posts that we get on Facebook when someone says, thank you so much for telling our story. I was so affected by this, and I want to tell other people about it. That's probably the best reward.
Mm-hmm. What's the take-home value when someone watched this movie?
You mean for them personally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it depends on where you're coming from. I mean, for an adoptee, some people are further along in their journey than others, and some are just starting. So I think it depends from an adoptee perspective. If you've been wanting to connect to your community and to see those voices that are so much like yours up there on the screen talking to you and making you feel like you're not alone, I think that has to be so amazing to feel that sense of connection. Because for an adoptee, that's probably the biggest sense of loss is not feeling like you're connected to something or someone.
Yeah.
And to know that they're, you know, your brothers and sisters who are out there who've experienced the exact same thing as you, I think that sense of community is so important. And then to those who didn't know about it, whether they're, you know, first generation Vietnamese boat people or, you know, non-Asian or parents who are considering adoption, there's a lot of educational takeaway to see that, you know, even though that there are faces out there that you may not identify with, the stories are very relatable. From Bert and Sarah who were trying to adopt to the, you know, the people who were the volunteers who showed such bravery at such a young age to help bring these children over to the adoptees themselves who, you know, as Generation X, you feel the sense of what they were going through. That, I mean, it's all very relatable, you know, everyone going through it, finding their identity. In the phases that they went through, predominantly in college, I think that's something that most people can identify with.
Right.
Whether, you know, you're an immigrant, you know, whether you're from America, I think everyone can connect to some part of the story and take something away from it.
Well, the generation itself right now, the current state of time, certainly gave us this wonderful atmosphere and environment for us to be able to relate to, you know, to your movie, and for that I think the timing is always right, and the timing is right for you. The irony of it, I think, if had you completed it 4 years ago, the impact it would have had probably would be less as it would have been right now, because everything is about timing. So I think the timing that it took you to do this in 5 years and having it released recently, I mean, it's just fascinating. I mean, it just reminded me of what Paul Prudhomme did for Cajun food and the Cajun people in Louisiana, because I kind of pretty much grew up in Louisiana. And prior to when Paul Prudhomme coming out with his Cajun blackened redfish recipes, you know, I mean, it's being Cajun is a bad word. I mean, I've got Cajun friends that went to school that that could not speak Cajun language because the parents wouldn't want them to do that because they consider it as a minority or it doesn't fit to the mainstream and so forth. And I, and then when all of a sudden right now being Cajun is fashionable, everything Cajun is, you know, the best of the best, so to speak, in terms of food and culinary and everything else. So having said that, I think and it's sincerely my hope that what you have done with Operation Baby Lift, the timing and everything else certainly will help to propel you and adoption, international adoption, that is, in some ways, or even the whole story about Asian American, being that this month is Asian American, Pacific American Heritage Month, if I'm not mistaken. And I didn't even realize that such a month exists until last year. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but I personally, for myself, that's, you know, unfortunately, that's what happened. I didn't even realize it until it was last year when somebody was saying, you know, hey, we can market your book because you're an Asian American. I said, what? That's not important to me. You know, okay. I'm an American, so to speak.
Yeah.
So anyway, but that's what you have is fantastic. How can someone get in touch with you or learn a little bit more about you and your work, Tammy?
Well, thank you. We definitely try our hardest to connect with the community. We have a website, thebabylift.com, that's dedicated to the documentary, and it has a place on there where you can contact me personally. We also have a Facebook fan page for the film, and then our umbrella organization, which is ATG, Against the Grain Productions, we have our own website dedicated to the nonprofit, and that website is againstthegrainproductions.com. And we also have a fan page for that, as well as a blog page, and we send out a monthly newsletter to allow our community to let us know what we're doing for outreach and, you know, what's going on with the film and what's going on with the adoption community as well. So we do as much as we can to keep active and to keep connected with everyone.
Fantastic. And what can we expect from you from the rest of the year and beyond?
You know, as I had mentioned, making a film like this, even if it takes 5 years, it could take another 5 years just to make sure that it's distributed and marketed and gets into the hands of the audience. So I think that's going to be a big part of my next journey is just making sure that my child can now stand on its own and walk and talk and live on its own. And, of course, my nonprofit also keeps me very busy, and this is all on the side because I have a full-time job where mm-hmm. I develop programming for a television network. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is my side passion, and I just want to make sure that, you know, I can give back as much as I can through my nonprofit and through this film. And then on a personal note, you know, it's time for us to also start focusing on our own family and starting a family, especially, you know, this film has evoked that much more from me and my husband mm-hmm. is, you know, what does that mean for us and our family in moving forward? So I've definitely got, you know, baby on the brain from a number of different angles.
Fantastic. We're coming close to the end of the show. Lana, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, thank you so much for asking. Yes, I do. And the recipe for living is have fun, have faith, don't worry so much, especially when you're a mom. Your children's lives are unfolding in the way they're meant to be. So share the journey with them. It goes by very, very fast. Enjoy. It's a wonderful adventure. And my thoughts are with everyone listening to this broadcast, to all the moms out there. Have a very happy Mother's Day.
Thank you very much. That's a wonderful recipe for living. You know, as kids, I have to tell you this, though. You know, we always know it all, so I have to let you know that. But it's a wonderful recipe for living, and I appreciate that very, very much. Tammy, Lana, thank you for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be a number one New York Times bestseller author, Debra McCormick, and Debbie and I will be discussing a very heartfelt project, Meet One, Bless Two, for Project Lena's Mission, Newborns in Need, and Binky Patrol. We will also be talking about her latest book, Hannah's List, A Letter of Love, as we celebrate Mother's Day 2010. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to From My Mama's Kitchen. com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening this morning. Have a great week. And Lana, Tammy, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.